I have just announced that I was going to have a hot fudge sundae, and that's because Mark Bernay goaded me into having a hot fudge sundae. I wasn't going to have one until he kept goading me into it, and then he simply told me that he, Mark Bernay, is going to have one with me. Did you hear that? He is going to have a hot fudge sundae with me. This is Al Bernay saying goodbye.
Al Bernay is a litter bug.
Mark Bernay threw him.
So, greetings everybody, this is Wes.
And this is Mark Bernay, the world famous.
The world famous, worldwide, the worldwide, nationwide, and even on some other planets,
right,
famous.
And the president of the Mark Bernay Society, the same society that Al Bernay was a member of, and that's why he's called Al Bernay.
Al.
Yep.
Nice. So, today's show is a special show. We're going to dedicate this show to Al, who has passed,
passed away.
We talked a little bit about in the last show, but Mark, well, I wanted to spend some time compiling audio files of things that tapes that Mark and Al had made in their youth, and just some really interesting things. But I know that it's just much too hard for people to actually go and click on links to listen to phone trips and. So I figured I would go ahead and merge some of these.
Yeah, if you go to the Phone Trip site, there's several recordings with Al Bernay, but not really that much. There are other ones that have a lot more of him that we'll list on our webpage because I don't remember them off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But if you go to www.slurpcast.com, that's the blog where we have a background for each of these recordings where we put in notes and URLs and stuff.
Now, normally, Mark and I spend time eating dinner and talking about technology with, and we, our goal is, as we always say, to try to talk about where these technologies originated from and the old computer systems and things that used them. But today's show, as I said before, we're gonna kind of push that aside a little bit. We'll still talk about technology, but mostly within...
Half rack of ribs, one of you gentlemen.
Over here.
That's him.
Yes.
Or would you like over here?
Over here.
Oh, cool.
Nice. Is there extra plate for the bones and such?
Oh, okay.
Do you need an extra setting? Are you going to share this or something?
No.
No, you're okay.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and then, of course, the reason we call it Slurpcast is that normally we go someplace that has soup or something slurpable, so we're making slurping and munching sounds in the background as we eat dinner. But here I have these hard croutons, so it really should be a crunch cast. I wonder if that's available because...
crunch cast.
Because I'm eating these croutons, but anyway...
We could just have a bunch of them and have them all point to the same URL.
Right.
And then we could announce this every single show. We could announce a different URL.
But you're right. I do own shitcast.com.
Yes, you do.
And I use the website I normally use to redirect things. I was having trouble with, so I haven't quite redirected it, but I'm probably not going to get around to it because I have to go to Los Angeles tomorrow and stuff. So I'm probably not going to get around to having Shitcast activated until a little later.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the history behind how Al got his name. Did you ever explain in the podcast, I think you did, about how the Bernay Society was founded?
Yeah, it actually was very involved with Al because I met Al when I was in college and he was a few years older, but he was very heavily in the phones.
Awesome. Thank you.
And back then, I had discovered the loop-around test numbers that the phone company used to have.
Okay.
Actually, they still do have them in some places, where it was a test number that a switchman could use to test the volume of trunks, make sure that the different trunks from one central office to another were working properly. And what they used to do before that is they would call up their friend in another central office and say they want to do a test.
Uh-huh.
Then they would coordinate plugging their test equipment from one truck to the next.
Okay.
But that involved two switchmen for no really good reason because the machine could kind of do it just as well.
Uh-huh.
So with the loop-around test numbers, the switchman at one end could grab a trunk, call the loop-around test number in the other office, and then with two different phone lines, and then the loop-around test would send the transmission. So they made a tone in one, they could hear the tone coming out of the other one,
mm-hmm.
and therefore test two trunks at once, essentially.
Cool.
Except they were only testing one direction of each of those trunks, and some trunks had different electronics for the two different corrections. But in any event, using that machine, they could do a test without needing someone at the other end.
Mm.
Okay. But kids discovered those Lupron test numbers, and basically...
What year was this again?
It was early 60s.
Okay.
60... just early 60s, basically.
Okay.
But the Lupron test numbers remained on forever, and they still are today. Uh-huh. Except mainly they're, like, they have blockages so kids can't play with them anymore. But the phone company can still use them for testing, but kids can't play with them.
Okay.
But back then, if you just called this pair of numbers, which at the time in Los Angeles was a prefix plus 1118, and then the other side was a prefix plus 1119.
Okay.
Or niner. Yeah. But the that's a long story. But the suffix for the Lupron test numbers was different in every city, but that tended to be the Southern California one. And then in Seattle it was 0044 and 0045.
Okay.
That's an example of how different they could be.
Wow.
So if one kid called one of those numbers, the other kid called the other one, they would get connected to each other. So you just basically be connected to someone at random.
Okay.
And that was one way the kids used to meet over phone lines before the internet.
This was like considered what in today's terms to be a conference line.
Yeah, except those loop arounds could only take two people. There were other things people would discover where they could have multiple people on the line. But
okay.
The loop around things could just handle two.
Okay.
But you could have two in different switch rooms. Like, I'm not saying for all of Los Angeles you only have two, because each prefix in central office would have a separate machine.
Okay.
So multiple people could connect just by trying one prefix after another so they don't get a busy signal and get through.
Okay.
Okay. So one day when I was on those, I heard someone just playing an echo machine. I wasn't really sure if it's a person or exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, I did come to know it was a person because the person would make weird noises and stuff. It wasn't just an echo.
All right.
But I'd call one side of this loop around machine, and suddenly everything I said was being echoed.
All right.
But after a while, you'd hear someone making weird noises and then echoing themselves and noises and stuff, so I could kind of tell it was a person, but I had no idea who it was.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. But later on, I ran into someone who, I forget whether I met him on these lines. I guess I did. I guess someone who I met on one of these loop-around lines told me who it was who was doing the echo. He said it was this guy named Al,
mm-hmm.
who was doing all that echo stuff, and he knew Al.
Okay.
So, and at the time, I was interested in phone equipment a lot. It wasn't just that I'd discovered these loop-arounds, but I had built some early day switching equipment where I could have two phone lines connected together and do different things with this very fancy relay circuit, total overkill kind of thing. So he told me that this Al guy did that same kind of stuff.
Okay.
So he introduces me to Al, and then eventually went over and met him in person and started being friends with him.
Now, just to explain to the audience, this is in the time before
the internet.
I have to explain also that back then, to play with phone lines was a very not necessarily a good thing, because in order to...
It was illegal.
What's that?
It was illegal to attach your own equipment to the line, for one thing.
Well, I was getting there. But so Mark and Al and a bunch of other people were doing things to figure out how phone lines worked when they weren't supposed to, and there was no documentation and nothing available.
Right, and I say it was specifically illegal to hook up equipment to the line, but they didn't really enforce it that much.
Politically correct, but I guess that's not possible.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no.
Go ahead.
But anyway, they didn't really enforce it that much, as long as you weren't causing any harm and stuff. And later on, there were court decisions and FCC decisions where it did become legal to do that. So I go over to Al's house, and I'm totally blown away that he had this basement. He lived in, quote, the basement, which was a basement to his parents' apartment.
Okay.
It was meant to be a nice, neat extension to that apartment with a bar and a bathroom and extra bedroom and stuff.
Cool.
But he just had equipment absolutely everywhere. I do have a picture of this. Maybe I can... If I ever get around to it, I do have at least one picture of the basement. I have a picture of him in the basement talking on the phone and stuff.
Okay.
Like that, and he had hair then. See, I was better known for the bald guy,
mm-hmm.
because he went bald pretty early in life.
Okay.
But not shaved. I mean, just naturally kind of bald. But he actually did have hair back then.
And he pretty much lost everything. It just kind of like...
There's a little fringe around the outside. But, you know. Yeah, as mentioned last week, just go to ICBaldPeople.com.
Yeah.
And you'll see a picture of Al Bernay with his baldness and stuff.
Mark Bernay threw his ice cream top. His ice cream cup on top of mine. No! Make the recorder out of it! Mark Bernay just tried to kill me to death. Shut up, ass breath. Mark Bernay put his cup on top of mine when I threw mine out. And he has the nerve to call me a litter bug when he knew how I was going to throw mine away and put his on the top of mine.
So anyway,
he looks in that picture like the Scrooge, or
I know.
He's been cartoon characters. He just reminds you of some kind of cartoon
character like that, right? He'd always get mad for people making a cartoon character out of him, but we all did.
Well, his mannerisms and the things that he thought about were just totally so original that it was hard not to.
Right, exactly.
He was a character.
Yeah. So anyway, so back then. Security guard, are we allowed to podcast here?
He's not looking.
He's walking by. Yeah. So I go to his house and I'm blown away that he has all this equipment that he built himself a million times more than I did. And his equipment, he liked pegboard. He would build a lot of relay equipment on pieces of pegboard, and then he had like a clothesline hung along the room. And he would hang pieces of pegboard on this clothesline and then wiring from one piece of pegboard to the other to control what he wanted it to do.
Jeez.
And all that.
Right.
And he also just had big pegboard stuff hanging on the wall with equipment mounted on it and things like that. And he had multiple phone lines. Yeah, I thought I was good because I had two.
Okay.
I had my parents' line and my line, which I could tie together and do things together.
Okay.
But he had maybe 7 or 8 phone lines back then.
Okay.
And... he had equipment to play recordings. Where this was before you could buy your own answering machine. You had to get any answering machine from the phone company.
Right.
At an expensive price per month. They were just very limited to what they could do.
You had to essentially rent it, right?
Yes. But also they were just basic, very simple answering machines. But he had built equipment where he could put a regular tape recorder on the line. And
nice.
People could call in and hear a recording.
Okay.
And... he could play that recording to multiple lines at once. And also he had this little switchboard he built where he could take the recording off those lines and have them become a conference instead, so people calling those different numbers would all get connected to each other.
Okay.
But so he would run the conference line by manually when he had a chance, where he would answer each line individually, ask who it was just to make sure someone was really there and it wasn't just a prank call.
Okay.
And then he'd push a button to put them into the conference. You know, so he would do that in an hour at a time and then get bored with it and then put it back on the recordings and stuff.
Okay.
And a lot of his reason for doing that, all that, was to recruit map workers because he was one of the people selling, you know, running the Maps to Starstones business. If you see movies about Los Angeles, so especially older ones, they'll very often show kids on street corners selling Maps to Starstones, and that's... he wasn't the only one doing that, but he was one of the main people doing that.
Uh-huh.
And still was. The day he died, he still did have that business running.
And I put a link to an interview last week's show that one of his map workers made of him, interviewing him about the map business and getting his just general opinion on things.
Right. But he had been running that business, as I say, since before I met him, for the 60s at least.
Wow.
Because he started selling maps as a kid himself for someone else, and then he later on took over the business of that one set of street corners. Yeah.
Was it profitable?
At one time, because they sold a lot of maps at one time. But then later on, it kind of went downhill.
Okay.
But he still kept running the business as he liked running it. But I don't think he was making that much money with it lately. So he would do those recordings and the echoes and the conferences and stuff like that, mainly to recruit kids to sell maps for him.
Mm-hmm.
But also a lot of phone freaks discovered it and would meet on there and all kinds of stuff. So
okay.
So he didn't limit it to Mikuni Kids Only, he would let anyone call in.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
But he would mention on there all the time that he runs this map business if anyone wants a job. Yeah. So anyway, he also had tape recorders, like the Echo Effect that I said I really ran into. First time I ever heard of him was this Echo Effect on one of the loop around numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He had three-headed tape recorders, which have a separate record head.
And a playback head.
A separate erase head, record head, and playback head.
Nice.
And tape recorders like that can be, you could feed back the signal from a playback head into the record again and make echo effects with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he would put that on the phone line. He had the equipment to put that on the phone line, mm-hmm. which was not common or possible unless you built it yourself and all that.
So did he have like a good job or something, or how did he pay for all this?
At that time, I think at that time he was just running the map business and making money on it.
So it must have been pretty profitable.
At one time, yes.
Yeah.
He did have real jobs. Like, he worked at Lockheed for a while.
Right.
In aircraft maintenance. But that may have been before I met him. I forget when he did that.
Okay.
And then I think at the time I met him, he was just living off the map business. And later on, he got other jobs as well. But let's say the Mark Burney incident was one of the things I would like to do is call up people, make prank calls to people, and tape record them, and then rewind the tape quickly and play back to themselves what they had just said. Okay.
Okay.
So one day when I was over there and a couple of map workers were over there, they were making different kinds of prank calls on people. Also, the other thing is just the concept of conferencing several people together. I mean, nowadays anybody can get three-way calling,
mm-hmm.
which is just a cheap feature that a lot of people have. But back then, again, that was impossible. You had to do that yourself. But Al can make a three-way call by calling people on two lines and pressing buttons on his conference switch to connect them together. He could have like several, not just two, but a bunch of people connected together like that.
Okay.
So a combination of all that, one of the kids over there knew this guy named Mark Burney, and they were making prank calls to him. And Al decides to tape record Mark Burney and play his voice back to himself.
Okay.
So Mark says, hello. Al rewinds the tape quickly, and Mark hears his own voice saying hello.
Okay.
And then Mark says there's somebody else on the line, because he was talking to one person, but suddenly hears this other voice and doesn't realize it's himself.
Okay.
So he says, there's somebody else on the line. Who is it? And Al repeats each sentence to him, so he's talking to himself. Who's the male voice? This is Mark Burney. And then it says back, this is Mark Burney. He says, how could you be Mark Burney? That's who I am, or something. And anyway, so just kind of good. So we have this prank to Mark Burney doing all that.
Okay.
And because this is all involved tape recorders, the whole thing was recorded. Al didn't really deliberately record it, but because each sentence was being played back,
okay.
and he was recording the next sentence, by the time it's all done, his tape has this whole conversation of Mark Burney on there.
Awesome.
Right?
Awesome.
So we tried at his house, we tried making prank calls to other random people and just playing this tape to them of Mark Burney one sentence at a time.
Okay.
And we found that people would talk to it. Okay. And you could even play it two or three times. They would continue talking to it until they finally realized something's wrong.
Okay.
All right. So.
And in the meantime, are you guys just cracking up in the background? Just
yes.
loving every second,
yes.
every second of it?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Okay. And then, so I took a copy of the tape home, and I tried it also. From home, I could call people with a prank call and play one set at a time, and they would talk to us. So I did that for a while.
Okay.
And then, a little bit later, I needed to come up with a phone phone handle. You know, people had different handles that they were starting to use, and to be anonymous.
All right.
So I decided to call myself Mark Burney just because of this funny experience with this tape.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, we formed this society, this essentially joke society called the Mark Burney Society. Where about the only thing we did is people would take on the name Burney as their last name. They'd keep their original regular first name, but they'd become Burney as their last name. That's how he became Al Burney, and we were a bunch of other Burneys
nice.
That we had. Yeah.
Okay.
But he just liked the name Al Burney. He just used it as his phone handle forever.
Okay. It just became his name.
His name, yeah. And he would even get email addresses in that name and just different things in that name, yeah. And I was always president of the society, and he was the Pacific branch coordinator, so he handled, because I moved to Seattle at that point.
Oh, okay.
So he would handle any matters in California.
Nice. So he called him the Pacific branch coordinator? Nice.
Yeah. Well, we used to name the branches based on the Bell System company we were in.
Oh, nice.
So at that point, Pacific Telephone covered California and Nevada. So California and Nevada were in the Pacific branch, and I was in the Pacific Northwest branch, okay, living in Seattle, because Pacific Northwest
sounds
Bell.
So official.
Oh, yeah. I know.
It's all official.
I know. Yeah, got it.
That's awesome.
Mark Burnet stopped for a green light simply because some old dirty red truck with a siren was going by. Mark Burnet didn't go. He had the green light. He tried to kill me just now. Mark Burnet just tried to kill me. Anyway, let it be known he stopped for a green light. Goodbye.
So anyway, that's where the name Burnet comes from. And I still have the Mark Burnet speech. I still have that tape. I'm kind of reluctant to put it on the air because the real Mark Burnet is still alive. I'm kind of reluctant to put his voice on the air.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least I think he is. And I think the real one's still around.
Could he sue you if he...
I don't know. But I just rather not put that on the air.
You could just do it.
Yeah.
You should. I mean, that's like... It's a classic. I mean, that's like...
I know.
Well, okay, at least digitize it. Keep copies
alive. I do have that, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, you don't want to lose that.
I can play it right now. I have my notebook here. It's on it. But, and then there's also that same piece of tape. I forget exactly why it's there, but part of the prank call, there's this lady named Mrs. Swanson who kind of shows up on this tape. I forget exactly why.
Okay.
So the part of the tape that has Mrs. Swanson on it, we call the Mrs. Swanson speech. And Mrs. Swanson basically says, "Oh, well, I'm sorry. I thought, well, this phone..." And that's all. Yeah. But somehow she got a prank call and misunderstood. And says, "Hello." It says something like, "Hello, this is Mrs. Swanson." And then she says, yeah. So anyway.
Wow. Swanson's
speech. Yeah, so we have the Mrs. Swanson speech and the Mark Burnet speech are two historic documents, kind of like the Bible or the Declaration
awesome.
Of Independence
that
or something.
Awesome.
You know. So
did you ever use, like, Mrs. Swanson to describe certain things that happened throughout life later on? It was like that's...
Well, yeah, if we wanted to apologize to each other, yeah, between Alan and me, if we wanted to apologize to each other, we'd often say, "Oh, well, I'm sorry. I thought, well, this phone," as our way of apologizing.
"Well, this phone."
Yeah, and then we also had a bunch of mannerisms that Mark Burnet Society members were expected to do based on the Mark Burnet speech.
Okay. This became sort of like embedded and ingrained in like everything you guys did.
Yes. Like for example, one thing at the end, when Mark Burnet says goodbye, Al stopped the tape slightly early, so he ends up saying goodbye before the tape kind of rises at the end, because the tape recorder is slowing down.
Oh, okay.
So it makes a rising effect from the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he plays the tape, he doesn't say goodbye at the end, he says goodbye, or goodbye, or something. So,
all right.
So based on that, all Mark Burnet Society members, when they're hanging up the phone, will always say goodbye. Or more properly, you say goodbye, but then press the hook switch right in the middle.
Oh.
So the other person hears goodbye without you deliberately doing it with your voice. It was more proper. Or if you're a person, you'd say goodbye.
Right.
You know, rather than goodbye.
Okay.
And then where Mark Burnet says, "How could you be Mark Burnet?" And his answer is, "That's who I am."
Yeah.
We've generalized that into a way to answer. If anyone asks you a question saying, "How could something?"
Yeah.
You must answer it similarly to the way Mark Burnet did. So you have to answer it with that's who, except we generalize that because you can't always answer with that's who.
Okay.
So you could answer with that's who, that's what, that's when, that's why, or that's how.
Okay.
So any how could question must be answered with one of those.
Right.
And if you slip up, then the other person could demand you apologize and stuff like that. You know. So we would always play jokes on each other where you change the conversation, switch topics and everything, kind of sneak in a how could question.
Okay.
Maybe ramble on for 5 minutes. You'll have the question be 5 minutes long with how could at the beginning,
right,
and hope they'll forget that you said how could at the beginning and try to trap them, things like that.
Okay.
You know? So Al Burnet would always play that game with me, and some other Burnets will too. There are other Burnets still alive, you know.
Yes.
So,
oh, yeah.
Like there's Chris Burnet.
Right.
There is something with red lights and a siren. Mark Burnet got off easy. He didn't stop this time. A little white truck with a red cross on it and red lights and a siren. Mark Burnet kept going. Mark Burnet just answered a why would question by saying that's where it's at. This is Al Burnet.
I think those are the only things we really got from that recording, but the other tradition was Niner. I think I mentioned before that I took flying lessons at one point, and Mal did also. Mm-hmm. And pilots all say Niner, so we started saying Niner.
Niner.
We kind of made that a tradition, except it wasn't really a phone thing. Yeah.
Well, then he started using that, though, and demanding on his conference line that everybody say
that. People say that, right.
And that's one of the things he's famous for, or at least been written about.
Yeah, and then if you would slip and say nine, then you criticize the other person about, why are you saying no in German? What are you talking about? We're talking in English here.
Well, so my experience was that I met him through you, mm-hmm. and he struck me as somewhat like just sort of not terse, but like he just wasn't really emotional when I first met him. And,
right.
And then one morning I was over and he was waking up and preparing to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. He was very, very serious about it. And he was very like, he was getting things ready as if he was going to go on this big, very long journey.
Right.
And I thought, wow, this is, whatever it is really important. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, and in all, and very serious and looking straight at me with a very serious
right.
tone, he says to me, I'm going to visit a tree.
Right.
And that was it. Turned around and I was
and
like,
and he didn't explain what
I
it was.
I didn't know what to yeah. think of that. He's going to visit a tree?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I pulled you aside and said, Mark, what does this mean?
He would go to the bathroom on trees. He would go to the bathroom on trees. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
I never told you?
No. But no, I found out what was going on.
Right.
He was actually going to a strawberry tree, or not a strawberry tree, but some kind of
or
a tree
blackberry.
With fruit.
Yeah, to pick fruit. Yeah,
to pick
exactly.
fruit.
Exactly,
he was
yeah.
going to hang out there. Is
okay.
The lights in your way?
Oh, it's okay. That's okay.
I'll just stand way. Here
oh. Oh, okay.
for the
yeah.
whole session.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
And
yeah. yeah, we're sitting outside, and the sun suddenly broke through the canopy that was covering us. But
yeah.
Anyway.
I'm standing up, looking like an idiot, standing over Mark.
It's okay. I don't care.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, he was very into a raw, fresh fruit as a major part of his diet. Like probably 2/3 of his diet would be fresh fruit, preferably ones he picked himself directly off the tree.
Okay.
And sometimes he'd just eat them off the tree. Sometimes he would pick enough to take home for the last a few days, especially oranges. He had this thing about believing that oranges were extremely healthy and would protect his health and all that, which... We were all very disappointed at how young he died, because he died at a perfectly ordinary age that everyone else dies, and we were expecting him to live a lot longer because we kind of believe in all this food stuff. But
yeah.
you know,
no.
So anyway, so that's why that he would tend to know places he went to often, like cities he went to often. He would know where there were fruit trees he could go find and pick fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have this one story that there he took me once to this orange grove in Southern California that. He assured us was abandoned, even though it kind of looked like the trees were in very good condition and stuff. And we're saying they're picking fruit, and suddenly this farmer shows up with a shotgun and chases
Whoa.
A farmer.
Okay.
Because he was wrong. It wasn't abandoned
was
at all.
Lying.
But yeah. But later on, though, he did. Here's my phone.
Is that your iPhone?
Yes.
Barbecue sauce on your hand.
Okay. But it'll wear off. That's okay. But so anyway, the...
Can I sit down now?
Yes. Yes, you can. So...
Okay. You sure?
Yeah.
No, you're not. You're
okay.
Not sure.
Yeah. I'll move over.
I'll move over this way.
Here. Actually, there's a little shadow right here. I just can't eat over here, but... Yeah. So anyway, that's what... He would always go to pick fruit himself if he could find it.
Okay.
Tricky. Otherwise, he would eat at... He would go to farmer's markets or... certain fruit stores only that he really trusted the quality of their fruit.
Okay.
And stuff. So, anyway, that's what that would have been about.
Yeah.
And he always did that. I say he, what's ironic is that he thought the fruit would protect him and everything, make him live a long time. But he was actually at a farmer's market buying fruit when he died.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's...
And then in later years, at one point, the phone company was forced by the FCC in court to allow alternative devices to be connected to the phone line, but you're still not allowed to wire them in directly. You had to go through these coupling devices that the phone company would give you, that would supposedly rent you, not give you, but very expensively rent you, that were supposed to be to protect the phone network from your horrible equipment.
Okay.
Right? So Al and I at that point would rent the very cheapest device we could. They had different types of devices depending on what you were doing.
Uh-huh.
Like they had one that if all you wanted to do is manually connect the tape recorder to the line, but with no automation or anything, where you just manually push a button when you were ready to record, and it would connect the tape recorder to the line through the safe, supposedly coupling method and stuff. That one was 99 cents a month or $1.99 a month or something. And then they had other ones that were meant for automated equipment, like your own answering machine or your own conference line, or things that were going to answer automatically.
Mm-hmm.
That would essentially duplicate the whole phone line for no reason at all. Where when the phone line rang, this device would detect that, and that may make its own fake ring towards your equipment.
Okay.
And when you answered your equipment, the coupler would see that and would answer the phone line. When you hung up, the coupler would see that and would hang up the phone line on.
Why?
So it's good.
Okay.
No reason at all. But anyway, but that one, because it was so complicated, would be many dollars a month. And properly, for what we were doing, that's the one we had to have. But Al and I would both just rent that very cheapest one and not use it. We'd just sit over in a corner. We wouldn't actually use it for anything. We'd go ahead and connect our own equipment directly to the line.
Okay.
But because we were renting that, the phone company would be happy and would leave us alone.
Nice. Okay.
Essentially. Yeah, so we both had a phase of years where we were doing that.
Okay.
Until it became legal to connect your own devices directly. You
know? Okay.
And, yeah, I mentioned it on here before that, like, Al was essentially the first podcaster I ever heard of.
Right.
Because he would make those recordings available to the public on a phone line. We're only one or two, you only one or several people could listen to it at once. It's not like the internet where thousands could listen at once. But he would put these recordings on meant for the public that he would change periodically. Like maybe every day or two he would put a new recording on. And later on a lot of other people started doing recordings like that. But as far as I know, at least in Los Angeles, they all got the idea from him.
Yeah.
Because I think he had done it for years before other people started doing it. Maybe in other cities, people discovered the idea independently.
Hmm.
Yeah. So there are dialogue joke recordings and a bunch of recordings where people would act out skits. All the other ones would tend to be humorous.
Okay.
Except for Al's would tend to be educational or maybe humorous, maybe educational. You know, stuff.
Yeah.
These recordings are made possible by the boys who sell maps to Stars Home. This recording is for Wednesday evening and Thursday evening, 14 and 15 July 76. Today's tape, comments.
Oh, it's supposed to be comment time, I guess. Oh, well. Al, on your next bulletin, could you please tell me what a line tie is? Thank you.
Goodbye. That's when you connect two phone lines together, two separate phone numbers that you have in your premise, and run a conference so that two people on your two lines can be connected together and be heard. In other words, the plus side of both lines are tied together and the minus sides are tied together, usually by a double pole correction, single pole, double throw switch, single pole, double throw switch.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I just asked about the line tie a second ago. It's Spencer. I used to be a map worker, so you have to wonder who it is. Okay, so in your next bulletin, please explain what a line tie is and how you make your phones answer real quick. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Aspress, thanks for dumping me. Terrible. Okay, explain to me how your answering device works, okay?
An answering device works by the ringing of the phone, pulling a relay in, and the relay connecting its points together in such a way as to connect the phone across the relay coil itself, causing the DC in the phone line to keep the relay activated, that is down, which of course maintains the points that short across, and keep the coil on the line.
The one thing that's kind of common with all the different videos about mm-hmm. Al and doing, mm-hmm. like, especially the map working business,
right.
is that he had a soft spot for kids.
Right.
And he actually spent a lot of time taking care of kids who one might consider
right.
to be at risk or,
right.
you know, homeless in some cases.
Right.
And
more crazy mothers, more.
Okay. Yeah.
And those kids have grown up now, and a lot of them just really revere him. Like the guy who did that video you're talking about on YouTube. That was done by an ex-map worker who's now like 40 or something, but still remembers
yeah.
Al as being a very strong influence on his life.
Yeah.
And there's several map workers right now in L.A. who didn't really like the family's plan for not to really do a real funeral. They were willing to pay themselves for a funeral for him and
okay.
all that kind of
wow.
stuff.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I knew through you again some
mm-hmm.
of the map working
right.
kids that he was, you know, who was working for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they all spoke really highly of him. Of course, he wouldn't bring them up, I guess, if they didn't speak highly of him. But,
right.
But
right.
But still, it's like he was doing a lot of good work. Just sort of, I guess, in my mind, just sort of making sure that they knew that he was
right.
there for them.
Right.
You know, in a way like, you know, where some of these kids I guess might not have had fathers or parents who cared like he did.
At least the two I mainly know about.
Yeah.
Had no fathers and totally crazy mothers. One
okay.
of them was a totally drunk mother.
Okay.
These are mothers, these are parents I'd met myself.
Okay.
But one of them truly was crazy in a lot of ways.
Okay.
And one of them truly was a really bad drunk.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, so yeah. he had. So, I mean, the side we haven't really talked much about is the fact that Al's views on life were were so crazy and
right.
so unique and different. They kind of made you go, huh? What?
Right.
And
yeah, he hated the government for
yes.
various reasons.
Yeah. Various reasons.
Yeah. Being the things
that
were involved
in that. That could be a show
thing.
In and of itself, just the
yeah.
stuff that I know that he said.
Like, for example, one of the mothers would never give the kid his birth certificate or anything.
Okay.
And she wouldn't answer a straight answer where he was born. Every time we asked her where she was born, including me, I mean, I personally did this several times, she would give a totally different answer.
Really?
She would give a totally different city where he was born each time.
Where he or she was born?
Yeah, he. This is a he, yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is a boy map worker, so.
Oh, okay, where the kid was, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I thought you were asking where she was born, and she gave you a totally different answer.
No,
I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. But
she's lying.
Yeah, so, right. Anyway, just an example of how crazy she was.
Yeah.
And then. She finally, reluctantly gave him a birth certificate, you know, gave him a birth certificate. I think she just didn't want him leaving home or being independent of her or something.
Okay.
It was kind of weird.
All right.
The other thing I remember about her is you'd go in their little apartment. They were living in just a tiny one-bedroom apartment,
uh-huh.
like a little studio thing.
Okay.
And it was her, Frankie, and Frankie's sister, and she had a boyfriend. And she would rent out a space on the floor to just some homeless guy who'd pay her by the night to stay there.
Okay.
And so there's just, but it was just one room, a tiny little kitchen and a tiny bathroom.
Okay.
So this one room had just a bunch of beds along, just totally filled up with a bunch of beds side by side, and then a space on the floor where the homeless guy would sleep or something.
What?
You know.
Okay.
And then she would have her, for her, Frankie's sister, and her boyfriend, they would sleep on beds. But
they were all
side by side. The whole room was filled with little beds.
Okay.
Side by side.
And so this one space on the floor was there for the homeless guy.
She would rent to us, but not for free. She would rent it
right.
to the homeless guy.
So the whole family slept in this room
right.
together
with the homeless guy. Yes. Okay.
That's wonderful.
I know. And then there would always be a radio playing really loudly and off tune.
What?
You know, if you take a radio off tune, how it starts sounding really awful and stuff?
There's the sign, we just passed it, you've entered the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, okay. But so she would always have this radio playing loudly
okay. uh-huh.
and off tune a little bit.
Well, how do you play a radio off tune?
Because the old analog radios.
Oh, you mean like, off-tune. You mean fizzing, like
yeah,
white
just,
noise?
Yeah, just a little bit off tune.
Okay.
But it's not just white noise, but the whole sound sounds totally off.
Right, okay.
It loses a bit, does it very bad for the quality of the whole song when
sure.
you do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she would say,
purpose.
And then she, yeah, as far as I know. And then she'd say, Mark Brene, isn't that music beautiful, Mark Brene? Isn't that nice? And
you're
no,
like,
it wasn't nice
no,
at all.
This no, this is Satan's lair that you created.
I know.
What,
I know.
What are you doing?
So anyway, that's what Al rescued a couple of the kids from that, essentially.
Okay.
You know. as an example.
Gosh. Yeah, she's definitely... That's questionable right there.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, that's just one quick story about it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure there's others.
Yes.
But...
So, let's say, equipment-wise, as long as he lived in the basement, he had basically that same set of equipment with that same switchboard. They can make conferences, the same tape recorders. He didn't really change all that much. But he had these old Ampex tape recorders that he would use that were very good quality. It's based on the quality of the tape recorder, you can get better or worse echoes based on how good quality the, the tape recorder was.
Okay.
Because when you echo, you're playing back the same thing over and over again.
Right.
And any distortion will be amplified through every cycle of the,
of the tape recorder. Yeah, the
saline
and stuff.
So, anyway, so he had tape recorders that could echo pretty clearly for a few seconds.
Nice.
Okay, let's investigate Stu Funfone's imitation of my mother. You've already heard that. Now, here's a real recording of my real mother saying Alan. I'll let you listen to it a few times, and you compare. Does he imitate her good or not?
Alan? 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 Alan, please call. I have a question. What do you think of the fun phone machine that is on fun phone, you know, the one with the beep? That is all? Okay.
Look, Aspresso, if you're going to leave a comment, speak into your phone. You turned your head away and probably dribbled and drooled all over your bed or something while the phone was behind your back when you were talking. Keep your mouth into the mouthpiece. What do I think about Stuart's answering machine? It does its job. Machines are not complicated at all. Either they work or they don't.
This is Nina Holly of Malibu, and I want to know, why do you call 99?
Because my ears do not pick up words unless they are spoken with every letter that is supposed to be pronounced in the word. For example, the word word. Most people say word when it's really word. The average speech, most people don't put all the letters in. Consonants, final consonants especially, are usually very slightly pronounced or not at all. Like the word sent, S-E-N-T, or the word bald, B-A-L-D. Shut up. Anyway, just analyze your own comment on hearing it, and you will see how muddled and muddy it was and very hard to understand. Niner? Well, the average person pronounces the number five as fi, and the number nine as ni. So now we've narrowed the numbers five and niner down to fi and ni. But some people don't even blow their F's that much. They'll go, bye. And they're nine, they'll go, nine. So my ears, being damaged by radar from Lockheed years ago and losing high-frequency response, will pick up both numbers as nine, nine. And that is why I use niner. It is a standard term anyway for communications. And I picked it up from there when I flew a plane before. I had to say niner to the control tower, and I just got into the habit of using niner. Of course, I heard niner a long time ago when I was 11 or 12 and listened to shortwave weather broadcasts. They said niner, and it got me curious, and I finally got the message because I heard niner everywhere on the shortwave. I hope that answers the question.
There are plugins. This is totally off topic, but there are plugins that you can get, BST plugins, that emulate old analog tape recorders showing the heads for looping, for echoing.
Okay.
So same idea, but it's all...
But do they deteriorate like
an
old...
Yes, they did. And that's the thing that makes these BST plugins really, really special. they're supposed to deteriorate.
I'd have to hear it. Like, so.
Yeah. It sounds cool, but never having experienced hands-on the real thing.
Yeah, but I have. I had things like that, too, right?
That's true.
I didn't have the quality ones that he had, but I had 3-head tape recorders like Kadeco also, so I'm pretty familiar with what it should sound like.
Okay.
Yeah. He would always echo in all his recordings. Like, his recording would start out, "Attention, maps to stars, homes, workers, 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 okay. workers, workers." You know, they would kind of echo forever.
So, all right.
You know, as an example.
Okay. Workers, workers, workers.
Yeah. And then one of the themes of his old shows, he would emulate this radio station called KILL, Death Valley, California. And he would put on fake radio shows with from that.
KILL?
Yeah.
Cool.
Kill Radio. Kill.
Right.
Okay.
But anyway, when he was forced out of that, he started hating the government and hating certain people.
What do you mean?
Okay, I can't tell you. But his parents were living above, and he was living in the basement.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then his parents owned the apartment building.
Okay.
So when his parents moved out, they moved out and sold the building.
Oh, that's okay.
And now took over the whole thing. So he had the upstairs and the downstairs. So the upstairs he kind of kept fairly clean as his parents had it.
Okay.
So he could have visitors over upstairs, but only certain special people would ever get to see the mess downstairs, basically.
Okay.
Okay. But then the building was sold to someone who wanted to convert it to condos.
Okay.
And Al was given the chance to buy his condo, but they wanted to totally refurbish the building first. So he was told if he wanted to stay in there, he would still have to move out.
Uh-huh.
They were going to totally refurbish everything, and then he could move back in again.
Okay.
And he wanted it exactly the way it was. He was willing to buy it and give him premium money or whatever,
mm-hmm.
not to have to move out, because he had all his equipment all over and all this stuff all over the walls and everything. He didn't want to ever reproduce that anywhere else.
Right.
So he refused to buy it unless they'd let him stay in. They wouldn't let him stay in. He insisted on the remodel. So he finally ended up moving just to a small apartment and had to get rid of most of his stuff.
Oh, wow.
And then he moved from there to another apartment and then to where he, the place that he, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, he moved to where,
okay.
the place in Thousand Oaks where he died.
Okay.
So in each of those moves, he lost more and more stuff.
Mm.
So he never did get all that tape recording equipment set up ever again.
Okay.
And he basically got out of all the phone stuff and never really got into it very heavily once he moved.
Okay.
Once the first move happened. Just because it was hard to get all those phone lines again and building up the equipment to actually use for anything and stuff.
Okay.
But he still had the hoarding stuff. And in his later years, he had gotten interested in videotaping stuff. So he started out just by videotaping like anyone else would with things that he might watch later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
He would videotape things while he's out. Then he started getting the idea that there's things going by that are very valuable and maybe no one else is recording. So he started feeling responsible to tape record a bunch of stuff that might be historically important.
Okay.
As though he's the only one in the world who would be in a position to do that.
Okay.
So he started tape recording hours a day for history of things that he never would have a chance to watch.
Okay.
And then he still realized that too much was going by that he wasn't recording. So he had a spare bedroom and he bought several more VCRs and TV sets and set them up in the spare bedroom besides the original one. So then he'd go around spending an hour or two a day programming all those VCRs about the most important material going by to make sure it wouldn't get lost.
Okay.
And then so he's ending up recording hours a day
of TV.
Partly for himself to watch, but he never got around to it, and partly for history or something.
Okay.
So therefore, he was developing several videotapes per day of output that needed to be preserved. So he just started piling them up.
Oh, no.
And then piling them up.
Oh, no.
And then piling them up.
Oh, no.
To where in the end, there's probably thousands of videotapes piled up everywhere. Like just every room of the house,
okay.
every square inch, except for narrow aisles you can barely get through, was stacks and stacks of videotapes, maybe about 4 or 5 feet high per stack.
Okay.
And he always stressed to everybody that he knows exactly what's on every tape, but only by the position where they are.
What?
In other words, by which pile and how high up in the pile he would know what was recorded on there, but he didn't have any other notes.
Maybe.
So if anyone ever made a mistake, accidentally knocked over a pile, that material would be lost forever. He would never know what it was, never know where it was, and never be able to see it. So we always stressed how critical it was and be very careful around all
the files
and not knock them over. And I never did knock one over. I was so proud of myself. Hey, maybe when I go to the condo now, I can knock the damn things over. But anyway.
This is for you, Al.
I know. So that's the most prominent thing you see everywhere, including what I call the obelisk. You know, from the movie 2001, has this big obelisk that shows up everywhere.
Right.
Okay, most of the piles are just an independent pile, just one pile of 20 or 30 tapes.
Okay.
But he has this one obelisk where there's a bunch of piles horizontally and vertically all touching each other, making this one big, like, obelisk thing sitting there, you know?
All right.
But anyway,
Yeah, he's a strange guy. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Chronologically storing videotapes.
It is,
Wow. No, I don't think people are going to forget these years. I think somehow there's so much video. That's the one thing that, like, everybody has a lot of.
Yeah, I know. So he never went back to the old multiple phone lines with conferencing. He never really went back to that.
Yes, but he did.
But he did have this machine called the Watson.
Right.
He had an old PC. So the other thing about him and PCs, he never wanted to move things. You know, when a PC became obsolete.
Yeah.
And really should just get a new one and copy everything over.
Yeah.
He never wanted to deal with copying everything over to the new one.
Okay.
So whatever the old one was, whatever he was doing on it, he would just leave that exactly in place and continue to use that one for whatever the old things were he needed.
All right.
And then he'd buy a new one and just put it somewhere else and do only the newer things on that.
Okay.
So he had, like, one that he ran the Watson on that just remained the Watson. I think he had one other one that just had a bunch of old programs on it. Then he had one more that he was using. Yeah.
Okay.
So the Watson, have we talked about it before? The Watson was a commercial recording card. So it uses a voicemail machine and being able to leave private messages to different people.
Right.
So, no, but he was very ingenious about programming it. Like, he was also, in his later years, a substitute teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He had been a full-time teacher for a while as well. But he thought the bureaucracy, that the government regulations about teaching and the bureaucracy of school systems just made it impossible to really educate the kids. He was always pissed off that if he would just have freedom to do what he wanted in the classroom like he used to have, he could do a much better job with the kids. He's probably right.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with him.
From what we've talked about, from what you told me and even conversations I've had with Al, that it sounds pretty much like when discipline is called for, it was effective.
Yes, and he was good at doing it. But it was also just the education. He didn't like the textbooks. He didn't like the commercial textbooks. He didn't like the requirements to have lesson plans and go through the textbooks in a bureaucratic way. He would always, when he had the chance, he would always write his own textbooks.
Oh, wow.
So I bet we'll find in his apartment when we go through it a whole bunch of his old mimeographed and dittoed duplicated textbooks he would write himself.
Okay.
I bet you will still find a bunch of that stuff. So at one point he became sorry he ever went into teaching because of all the bureaucracy. And then he switched over to substitute teaching because at least it wasn't very much work. At least substitute shows up. He would actually do work. He wouldn't just let the kids play around.
Right.
He wouldn't just show a movie. He would actually take over from the teacher and teach whatever the teacher wanted done that day and work hard at it.
Uh-huh.
But at least once the day is over, he'd go home. He wouldn't typically have to correct homework or give exams or anything. So he switched over to substitute teaching just because it was for him a lot easier.
Was there enough work for him, do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They liked him. The teachers liked him and would request him all the time.
Okay.
So he would work almost every day in his district and stuff.
Okay.
And then, why did I say that? I diverted from something I was about to say.
I'm talking about the tapes.
Videotaping.
And then we went off
his
on
old textbooks.
Textbooks that led into teaching.
Yeah.
But.
There's some point I was going to make. Well, maybe I'll think of it. Oh, that's right. About the Watson.
Oh, the Watson.
So one thing substitute teachers Sometimes they get their assignments in advance. Sometimes they get them that morning.
Uh-huh.
And his school district had an automated system, because in the past there'd be a person with the title of the sub caller who would call up subs and give them their assignments and stuff.
Okay.
But his district had automated that with a system that would call up and you would touch tone as an answer that you were there, and then it would read you an assignment, and you touch tone whether you're willing to accept the assignment or not.
Okay.
And stuff like that. And maybe you would call days in advance if a teacher knew they were going to be out on a particular day, even a month in advance, and they requested a particular sub, the system would call him up right then and let him know there's an assignment a month in advance. Otherwise, it might call that morning or whatever.
Okay.
So Al was willing to accept any assignment. He just wanted to work as much as he could.
Yeah.
So his answer was always yes. He would just take anything. So he programmed the Watson to match the machine calling up.
Okay.
And he programmed it in a way that would work for regular humans as well, but regular humans might not understand why. This would ask them at a certain point to touch tone a certain thing or something if you're human.
Yeah.
That didn't really make sense why he would want that. But the reason was to distinguish a person call from the subfinder automated call.
Okay.
So his machine would touch tone things into the phone that would be appropriate for the subfinder's thing.
Okay.
And it didn't really know what the subfinder was calling, but the fact that it did not get a touch tone from a person told that it might have been the subfinder's machine calling.
Okay.
So he would touch tone things appropriate for it, then go into a record mode where if the subfinder's machine was really there reading an assignment, his machine would record the assignment.
Awesome.
And then he would touch tone the key to accept the assignment, no matter what it was. So when he got home, he could just go through his recordings and see if the subfinder machine had given him an assignment or not.
Oh, wow.
But in the morning, he would still have to wake up very early in the morning and get ready. So just in case the subfinder call came in, he'd be ready to accept it.
Okay.
If nothing came in, then he'd go back to bed for a while. Or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but I say he was so good at the Watson. Watson programming language was very bizarre and very hard to deal with. And he was very good at doing stuff like that.
To be able to do that, that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
And then he would give each map worker and each one of his friends a code. And to explain to the public why they needed a code, in reality, the purpose of the code is so he could leave private messages back for you.
Okay.
If you left him a message, he could record a private message back that you would get when you type in your code.
Uh-huh.
But to explain that to the public, he would tell people that he was getting too many prank calls and too many telemarketer calls. So he would call it the anti-telemarketer code.
Okay.
So his machine, depending on whether the machine was in subfinder mode or not, it would say, enter your anti-telemarketing code followed by the pound sign now. And then,
nice.
And then it really would be your personal code, not really anti-telemarketer code.
Nice.
So,
nice.
You know.
Cool.
So he used that for all the map kids. Each map kid would have their own codes, so they can call up and get their assignments about when they should come to work and when they should work on a particular day and all that.
Okay.
And then just the friends would have a code just so they could leave private messages back.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
And he was using that. That system had become quite obsolete, really, but he was still using that till the end.
Okay. Now, is any of the system still running?
It was. Yeah, it was. I think one of the relatives went in and probably turned the computer off.
Okay.
Because the last time we called it, the phone line was still ringing, like it hadn't been disconnected.
Okay.
But the Watson machine wasn't answering anymore. Whereas a week or two after he died, it was still answering.
Okay.
You know, with people's codes still on there.
So that should still keep going.
Yeah, okay. I bet when we go in there, we'll find it was just turned off. But the machine will still be there.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Hopefully some of the relatives are paying the power bill, so there'll still be power.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Well, would you piggyback? Would you take that and let it run still? Or
no, but at least to go through it and stuff. Yeah, the relatives kind of said we could take things like that, so we'll probably be able to pick that up.
Okay.
The relatives are in control. He, as far as we know, didn't leave a will, so his relatives, who he never really had that much to do with, are basically in control of everything now.
Okay.
Run.
Probably rummaging through stuff.
No, they're not.
Okay.
The one relative so far who went through it was so horrified about what she saw, she was afraid to go back.
Oh.
And she handed it off to another relative who hasn't been in there yet. So no, they're really not rummaging through stuff.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's one way
of protecting certain
things. I know.
Yeah.
But the one relative who went in there, you know, every once in a while you see articles in the paper about police raid someone or someone dies, and they open the refrigerator or freezer and they find hundreds of dead animal bodies, like hundreds of gerbils or hundreds of rats or something.
Okay.
Have you ever seen articles like that? I've seen them through the years. I every once in a while see an article like that.
Okay.
Well, the relative who went in there was when she saw everything else and realized that he had this hoarding disease, she was afraid to open the refrigerator and afraid to open his garage because she was afraid that she was going to find hundreds of dead animal bodies in there, which is not true. He did not do anything like that. But,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
which is, anyway, so, yeah, so anyway, so another relative is now in charge. She's never been in there. And I'm going to go in with her for the first time she goes in.
Probably best. Probably best for you. You already know him, well and stuff.
Right. But. So I can interpret. It's like going into a museum and interpreting. So I can say, well, in this corner, Mr. Diamond, Mr. Bernay, I'm sorry, did this and that.
Right.
The corner.
I'll have to edit that out.
You know,
so. Awesome. Yeah, that's good. I'm glad that you're going to be one of the first people to get in there. So that'll be good.
So, nothing's been touched so far.
Okay.
But whether the power's on, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why the computer died.
So we have vowed subconsciously, or I think we did it over email, never to forget him and to continue to use his mannerisms and words from here on out.
Right.
So we'll be referencing him from time to time. And
yeah, see, everyone was always teasing him about being bald. He never liked it, but that was one of the things about him.
But you used to tease him, and he would react.
Yeah, right.
It's a good thing. That's cool.
But anyway, that's right. So I was saying about how he ended up hating the government for allowing him to be evicted, plus he ended up hating the landlord and everything about that landlord.
Okay.
Then he had run-ins with the government sometimes over the map business, over child labor law and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So he ended up really hating the government, partly about the child labor law stuff, partly because the police, he believed that his business was totally legal, other than maybe some minor child labor law stuff. It was totally legal in his mind to sell things on the street. And there actually was a court order that the maps were periodical and could legally be sold on the street.
Okay.
Otherwise, you were supposed to have business licenses and stuff.
Okay.
There's a fake iPhone over there. Can I go over there and laugh at that person? He probably believes he has an iPhone killer, but can I show him what an iPhone really does and how it's not true? Yeah.
2 weeks ago, you would not have been saying this.
I know. No, I always thought that those other, quote, iPhone killers were fake.
Two weeks ago, you would not be supporting the iPhone as you are now.
No, I always liked the iPhone since a year ago. I always wanted the 3G version. Well, I gave it back a year ago because I wanted the 3G version.
Yeah, but you complained,
and
Mark.
And the applications and stuff like that.
You had lists of issues with it.
My main issue right now is the battery life, and that is still true.
Yeah, I know. No, totally.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, anyway, and I still can't type on the keyboard, although I am getting better, but it's still hard.
No, it's learning.
Yeah.
Never mind.
But anyway. Speaking of that, Al always had this thing. Every time I went down there to visit, I'd have some new toy with me.
Uh-huh.
And I always call it my baby. This is my... I know I was always into portable small devices, right?
Right.
But I always call it, this is my latest baby that you can't touch. It's my baby. So the iPhone is one of the things I would have shown to him, except... The way I had it before, I took it on a trip to New York. I didn't see him at that point.
Yeah.
But that was an example of little toys I always buy and show to him. So I would show up and say, what baby do you have this time? And usually I had something new.
Nice. That's funny.
So anyway, so the map business, he started hating the government, partly because police would harass him for running the business.
Okay.
Partly because if something happened to one of the kids, like someone robbed one of the kids or something happened, the police refused to investigate. Even if they gave them the exact details about who did it and their license plate, the police would refuse to investigate and say, we told you it was dangerous to have these kids out here, totally your own fault, and they wouldn't do anything about the crimes against the kids. So anyway, so he's kind of just started developing a hatred for the government, which he just has always kept, basically.
Okay. Jeez.
And then I say partly that it was mainly the landlord's fault for evicting him, still the government allowed him to do it, has these laws and procedures that allow the landlord to do this.
Yeah.
And stuff,
Wow.
Well,
so...
Yeah.
Well, so I always wanted to interview him. I always wanted to do. I had dreams of having him have his own radio show.
Right.
Because of his views being so crazy, I thought there'd be a following just waiting to listen to what he had to say.
Well, there always was. When he ran the recording lines, they were fairly popular.
Yeah.
I know, but he just stopped doing that. He never did switch over to an internet method.
Stuff that he was saying that I would hear was just like fantastic. And I thought, you know, even as crazy as some of it was, people would just love to hear it.
Yeah.
It would probably have drawn a huge crowd.
You know, I should have set him up. He didn't really know enough about the internet radio and stuff to do it, but I should have set him up with an internet radio station.
Oh, man.
But he did kind of have a chance, though, because one of his friends is pretty big in internet radio right now and runs a full-time internet radio station, starting to make a little bit of money and stuff like that.
Okay.
So he would have shown Al how to do it. So Al knew that he could have found out more from that guy, but he just didn't see
all the initial stuff hasn't changed at all. All the stuff he would have to do is probably the same as it was back when he was doing it for fun. I think he would have gotten a kick out of it. But to have a fan base would be fun for him.
Right. But it wouldn't have been as useful, because he still, to the last day, still had trouble recruiting map workers, basically. And he always claimed that the United States was deteriorating because it became more and more difficult to find kids willing to work. And the kids started wanting like $10 an hour. They started refusing to work on commission like they used to.
Okay.
They started demanding like $10 an hour, whether they sold anything or not. They just got very lazy about waving to the cars and making attempts to get cars to stop and stuff like that. So he was always having trouble recruiting decent map workers.
Okay.
But the internet kind of recordings wouldn't have helped, because that goes around the world, and there's no way that the kids in the right territory would have found out about it. You know?
That's true.
Phone lines still would have been a better idea, but it's just he just never really went back to phone line stuff.
Yeah. It would have increased the popularity enough so that if he had an interesting show, he could at least bring in some kind of an income.
Right.
Although probably not
that hard.
Much.
It's hard to get to the point of actually.
Yeah. I mean, look at us. We're 30 shows in, and we're still.
Yeah.
But
we're not publicizing it.
I know.
Really. Although he wouldn't have known how to publicize it either.
Yeah, that's the weak spot. But
yeah.
So
I don't think he ever would have made any money, but he might have found it fun to do.
I think he would have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It would have been fun.
Right.
So.
And he has a couple of web pages. I haven't actually looked, but his web pages should still be up because they were on an ISP.
Okay.
They'll probably eventually disappear because the bill's probably not being paid. Yeah, I should really archive.
Yeah.
You have a point there. I should really archive this stuff.
Yeah, don't save it for the Wayback Machine.
He had two or three different web pages. I don't know if I can find them all now, actually, but maybe on his computer we'll find it.
So you're going to go down soon.
Yeah.
You're not going to be around...
Next Thursday. I might be back by then. I plan to be back by next Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, I might be.
I'll try to grab some stuff off the net for this show. Like audio segments, stuff off your phone.
Yeah, I'll tell you one of them. There's a website, mapstostarshomes.com, which Al did not own and did not run, but that's one of the people who archived, I think that's the right one. Actually, there's some other Maps to Stars Homes website that was something else. Well, we'll post the real URL, but anyway, there's something Maps to Stars Homes got something that's not only his recordings, but there's a guy who archived a whole bunch of recordings, because I would say Al's kind of spurred a big recording industry in LA of people changing recordings every day
that. Cool.
So there's a guy who has archived copies of an awful lot of that stuff, including a lot of Al's. So he has many different websites, but the ones with the Maps of Stars Homes name is like half Al and half some other people.
Okay.
As an example.
Cool. All right. Good. Well, awesome. So we'll get that stuff together. I'll post some links. I'll wait for you to go through it.
Okay.
Just to review it and everything.
Right.
And then, but I'll try to compile what I can, whatever I find.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of stuff out there.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So anyway. we'll do this as two shows then, I guess. Or
we'll
figure out. Just play it by ear. We'll try to get some text stories in next week, I guess. But see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So thanks for sharing, Mark.
Yeah,
it's kind of sad that Al's gone. I did a lot of, not soul searching, but just kind of like remembering all the different experiences that I had with him when he told me what had gone on.
Okay.
So, it's, I don't know, it's just kind of weird.